Well, there are several places that we could begin. I think one of the probably the most pertinent place might be last October. We had been to, my brother Bill and several other members of this company, and I had been to High Point, North Carolina. I think I'm speaking loud enough.
Speak louder if you can.
Okay. We've been to High Point, North Carolina, to the international home furnishings market. It's a huge, huge market, and it lasts about 10 days. We usually stay about 5. And, it was a nice market, and we got back. Everything was fine. We had scheduled the fellowship supper, you know, the Sunday afternoon after we got back the preceding weekend. If you were there, you remember that I was having a terrible time with a strange hacky cough. You know, I sat on the porch. I tried not to fellowship because I didn't really believe I was contagious. I mean, I really didn't. But, you know, so much of that is psychosomatic. You know, a lot of people think, oh, my gosh, he's sick, you know, and I want to get around him, you know. It's like my great aunt used to say, coughs and sneezes spread diseases, you know. So I didn't want to get around people either because I didn't want to make people feel uncomfortable. That's the furthest thing from my desire. Well, it's the truth.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just sat on the porch and coughed. Everybody else had a lovely time. David gave a wonderful teaching. And I had y'all pray for me, and the Lord, in his usual compliant manner, removed the cough. I didn't cough. I mean, I hacked a little, but I did one just sitting there, just one after another, you know. And it was pretty much... I was living okay until about December when the thing erupted again. And I was just... David had been trying to help me to figure out what could possibly be the cause of these things. And, of course, that's when he was particularly getting well-versed on these chemtrails that we have a lot of information on the Internet about. And he had seen where they had been spraying up in North Carolina, different places where I had been. And, of course, a lot of people, according to the reports that go out on these things, a lot of people come down with upper respiratory problems and they just cough their head off and they get flu-like symptoms. And because, you know, we're looking for some explanation as to why I had this thing. Well, like I say, it erupted again in December, and I requested prayer again, and the Lord removed it from me. And then February, actually, if you recall, it was on February the 19th, which was my birthday. Dale had made a big dessert, and I was going to bring it with me and all. And I'm telling you, I just got the coughing so bad. I says, honey, I'm just not going. Would you please just take it out there and let them enjoy the dish? And she said she'd be glad to. And so she did. And I just got progressively worse. And I said, I'm going to go to Dr. Ziemba and just let him look. Because I was getting encouragement from my mother and from my wife and from my son, from most everybody but David. And so I was just, and this group here. And so I said, well, what the heck? What's it going to hurt? I mean, at least he can go look and draw blood and take an x-ray and what have you. Well, I went. He's been out with a family physician for 9 to 30 years, and he's a Christian man. Anyway, I went to him, and they did the blood work, the diagnostic, and they did the x-rays, and they all came back clear. One thing on the blood work, so they were a non-specific infection. They didn't know what it was, but there was something causing some elevated blood sugar and a non-specific infection. So he wasn't satisfied. He said, well, I want to send you to an ear, nose, and throat man. So he said, I said, fine. So he made an appointment with Jack Lurton. I went to see Jack. And he did his test, and he says, I got to call Dick. That's the end, but I tell him, he's all clear as far as I'm concerned. He says, that larynx is a textbook picture of hell. So I said, thank you. Still going. Still coughing. So, time moved on. I'm still coughing. And I was really puzzled. Dr. Zimmer said he wanted me to go to see a pulmonary specialist, which is a heart-lung person. And yet I had come to the place where they'd already done this test, this test, this test, and everything was coming back. So prostate is in good health. Blood pressure is good. Cholesterol is good. I mean, everything was coming back good except for this non-specific infection. So I was just simply, man, I don't need to go anymore. I just need to trust the Lord in this. Well, I began to get, I mean, all along with this coughing, I'd been having some kind of a smothering feeling, which was creating a little bit of a shortness of breath in me. And I'd have to kind of really, you know, really work to get some breath. Well, it came about that I just got to where I couldn't even lay down in the bed to go to sleep anymore. Because I'd lay down, I'd just start coughing. Well, Dr. Zimmer thought I had GERDs. If you have any idea what GERDs is, it's something where something is wrong with your esophagus and it allows some of the stomach acid to back up and to come back up and to create this discomfort and this cough and all this stuff. Well, he gave me a medication for that, and it didn't do any good. And that wasn't it. But he was doing his best. You know, like they say, it's called the practice of medicine. He was practicing on me to see if he could discover what it might be that was the problem. Well, like I say, I got to the point where I could not lay down to sleep. For almost, you know, I don't remember exactly, and I don't want to tell this in any way that would make it sound like I'm telling a different story every time. But I'm thinking, on average, 3.5 weeks. For 3.5 weeks, I did not lay down to sleep at night. Because I'd lay down and I couldn't breathe. I'd have to sit right back down. I'd lay down and I'd go to coughing. And within 10 seconds, I'd go into this cough and I'd just have to get right back up. Well, I didn't realize that if you understand it at all, I'm just going to simply tell you, I was, in many respects, I was being tormented. I was being tormented big time. Well, I continued on. I knew I couldn't sleep. I did. I found the most comfortable place to sleep was at the dining room table. You know how you, as a kid, when you're in school, and they say, lay your head down on your desk and take a nap? Well, that's the only position that I could get in where I could sleep and breathe. So I slept sitting up. I said, you know, I know I'm healed. I know this is just not going to impact me any further. Well, it continued to impact me more and more. I mean, I think men that I meet with on a regular basis, and in this meeting here, you know, a lot of people noticed that, you know, I was in many respects getting progressively worse with this. Some people noticed it, maybe some others didn't. But anyway, I just continued on, confessing that I'm healed. I wasn't about to quit. You know, I felt weak. I wasn't getting rest. My rest was just nil. Well, it was my son John came home after 3 years in Korea. He and his wife, and it was so good to see him and to have him at home. It was a real joy. Of course, they have a troubled marriage, and of course, the stress of that was not easy on me because I really hurt for my son and I hurt for the girl too. Because their culture is so different from our culture, and they're very formal, and you know, Americans are just real laid back folks for the most part. So anyway, that added a little stress to me. Not much, but a little bit. But anyway, the days continued on, and I'd asked the Lord. I said, Lord, is it your good pleasure for me to go to this meeting? He said, yes, it is. So I said, well, you'll have to get me up and take me because I'm getting mighty weak. I can't go. So, but he did. He got me. I went. I know Fred has said, you know, he wish he had had the presence of mind to think about what was happening to me. But I guess about, I don't know what it was, maybe 7, 8, 9 days before it was time to go in the hospital, I suddenly noticed it was getting real hard to get my shoe on, because I didn't realize that my foot was swelling. Both of my feet were swelling. And then my ankles were swelling, my legs were swelling, my calves, and then my pants, man, I couldn't get my pants on. I don't know if y'all noticed when I came in here, I'd sit with my jacket in my lap because I had to undo this belt and loosen this zipper because it was just very, very uncomfortable. But I was determined I was going to persevere in the things that I have embraced for the last 12 years. So I made every meeting until the Monday before I went in the hospital on a Wednesday. And I made the meeting Wednesday night. That's when I really noticed something really dramatically different in me. You know, because I could take off and I could walk. And I could keep a good gait. And I would walk around. Our block over in Scenic Heights is a long block. It takes about 25 minutes just to go around this one. I mean, it's a big, long block, and I took it at a pretty good clip. And I could do it, and I felt good. I felt good from it. But if my wife and my son's new wife invited me to go with them for this walk around this block. Well, I'm telling you, I didn't make it to the corner before I said, I just cannot go on. I'm too weak. I take about 10 steps, and I just had to stop and breathe deep and try to, you know, get enough strength to go on. I said, y'all go ahead. I'm going to go back to the house. Well, I did. Well, anyway, you know, it's just like this rain we had today. It was a real blessing from the Lord. That particular Wednesday, if you remember, if you were here, it was raining. It was a rainy Wednesday. But bless Pat, that boy, that wouldn't be the day that I would be so weak that I had to take 5 steps and stop and rest and catch my breath in the rain. But that's okay, I did. So, I mean, even coming out here, I drove out here that night. And I drove home. Well, I got back to the house, and just walking from my car, if you've ever been to my house, I pulled my car all the way up to our house. I didn't have to walk but probably 8 steps to get in my front door. Well, I had to stop twice because I was so weak. I said, what is happening to me? I don't understand. I had called David probably, 7, 8, 9 days earlier, and out of a real heart of love, came over to my house and ministered to me all morning, one Friday morning. I called him at 5 in the morning, and I told him, I says, now, David, you know that I would never call you at 5 o'clock in the morning at your house if I didn't really need to talk to you. He says, I know that. And so I said, if you could come over here just as quick as you can, I'd be very, very grateful. Of course, I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but that's the way it's coming to my mind. Well, David came over, and he was there from, I guess, probably about maybe just a smidge before 7 o'clock until about 11 when he left to go to CBMC at Ryan's house. And he prayed for me. He anointed me with oil and ministered to me. And he prayed for the things that were symptomatic in my experience. He prayed that my lungs would fill with air and that I would get abundance of oxygen. He prayed all these things off of me. And, I mean, I felt incredibly better. I mean, just incredible. See, still didn't know it was this hard. Didn't have a clue. The only thing that I'd had that was a slight indication that there was could have been anything, but I had totally dismissed it, was at Fred's about 7 or 8 weeks ago on a Wednesday morning. We were probably an hour and a half into our study, and I got up one of those. It wasn't a major pain, but it was a crushing pain in my chest, and I got some discomfort in my left arm. It was it was textbook symptoms of a heart attack. And I just, being the shy person I am, I said, stop this beating and y'all get up and get down here and lay hands on me and pray for me. I feel like I'm having a heart attack. Well, they got up and came down and laid hands on me, and the Lord lifted it right up. And we went on with our meeting for another hour and a half. I mean, you know, you that were there remember this, and others may have heard about it. Well, anyway, David ministered me that Friday for, like I say, from 7 until about 11. About 11:10, I guess, he left to drive over to Ryan's for the meeting. I felt much better most of that day, but there again, I was still coughing. stuff was still coming up. I went back to the Wednesday night that I came home from this meeting. It was pouring down rain, and like I said, I had to stop several times before I could even get in my front door. And I was so weak, I was just to the point where I was literally falling to the floor. Well, I'm so glad. My youngest son was still out. He wasn't in. But my oldest son, like I said, who was just home from Korea, was home. And I got in the door. I says, "John, catch me. I'm falling." Well, he was sitting at the computer. I never saw that big boy move so fast. He came and caught me so fast. And his wife came and helped me. And they said, "Where you want to go?" And I said, "Well, just get me over to the dining room table where I sleep." Because I wasn't planning to come to the hospital. I wasn't planning to call the doctor. Well, John just took control of that. Because while I'm sitting there just, you know, just gasping for breath. And, of course, my wife had all been telling me, "Go, go, go, go. Please go." And my youngest son was saying, "Daddy, I just can't believe you're this foolish. Blah, 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 blah." Well, it's like I told these men, I told some of you in this group, I said, how in the world can I now, in my time of trial, totally disavow all that I've embraced for the last 12 years? How can I do it? I can't do it. Well, I was to the point of literally passing out. Well, John just called, he just called 911, bang. He says, "Get an ambulance over here." They just literally just took control while I was just trying to catch my breath, trying to get breath at all. Well, the ambulance was there pretty quick. They came in about, they were there no more than 15 minutes. They made a quick response. And the fire department came, the ambulance came. It was a big parade out in the street. I was the star, and then sitting in there and all this discomfort. So anyway, the people who were with the ambulance, they came in. They began asking me, "Mr. Taylor, what's the matter?" And I began to detail all that. I said, "Look at that leg." I said, it looks like a tree trunk. I want you to look at that leg now. It don't look like no tree trunk. It looks, my leg was hiding in there. There it is. This one, I'll tell you just as a brief aside, this leg right here was over twice as big as this one and had been for about a year and a half. And it was all water. See, I didn't know until they did the heart catheterization that I had had other heart attacks. See, the Lord had not permitted me to suffer any discomfort. Sometimes, I don't understand. I'm just saying he just didn't. Well, they wanted to lay me on the gurney. I said, "There's no way you're going to lay me on that gurney. I cannot lay down." I said, "You're going to have to take me sitting up." And so they thought about that and scratched their heads a minute, and they said, "Okay, we can do it. We can do it." And so they put me in the thing. They put, instead of having me lay down, they cranked the back up so I could sit there, and then they strapped me in. And they said, "Now, we're going to want you just, please just sit real still. We've got to strap you in." So they did. And then they took me out through the rain, got me back to the ambulance, got me in there and got me seated, strapped me into that thing. Well, they quick put a shunt in this arm and quickly gave me 4 shots of morphine, put an oxygen mask on my nose, gave me something else. You know, folks, I'm going to tell you something. I was really ready for some relief. I was majorly ready for some relief because I had been having this discomfort, major discomfort, for about 3.5 weeks. So they got me all fixed up, and then the ambulance took off, and they were giving me all kinds of stuff. They knew immediately that I was suffering from chronic. Just the most chronic congestive heart failure. I was blown away. I was literally blown away. I just thought, what? Not to the point that I lost the peace that passes understanding. I was just in total disbelief. I said, how can this be? How can this be? David had just counseled me for 5 hours, and he had made himself so wonderfully available to me to call him at any time and he would pray for me and minister to me. Well, they took me to the hospital, got me to the ER, got me inside. They x-rayed my lungs. They got me into this room, and they continued to they begin to give me a diuretic called Lex, and it really does. I mean, it works. It works. It really goes to work getting the water off of you. Well, lady came back after the X-ray and she said, "Mr. Taylor, I want to show you something." And I said, "What's that?" I said, "I want to show you how much of your lung was actually functioning as a lung is designed to function." She held up something about the size of a half-gallon carton of milk. And let's just say that's, just for the sake of the illustration, let's just say that's your lung. She said, "Well, let's just say this is a silver dollar." She says, "Of both of your lungs, you had about that much space in both of your lungs that were able to assimilate oxygen. The rest of your lungs totally filled with fluid." You know, I was literally drowning to death in the fluid that my circulation could no longer get to my kidneys to remove. And, of course, they began to, they just continued to enlighten me as to, how... They called me a code 3, which is a code blue, which is the most serious thing they got. They alert every doctor that's in the hospital. They need you. You need to get to the ER. So I was the star for a little while.
Blue.
Yeah, I was blue. Well, they kept me in the ER till about 3 o'clock. Then they said that I knew they were going to admit me. That's just my wife and both of my sons were there. They took me to a room. There's a lot I could say that I'm not going to say because it's extraneous information. But anyway, I went through pretty much all day Thursday getting a significant level of relief. I still could not lay down to sleep. I still had to. I'm real thankful for those hospital beds that pushed the back all the way up. One night I actually got out of the bed and just sat in the chair. And was able to get a little bit of sleep. And I was actually beginning to wonder, am I ever going to be able to lay down again and go sleep? I mean, that thought was really crossing my mind because it's so long since I had been able to lay down and have a peaceful sleep. Well, the Lord ministered to me, and he explained some things. And if you've received any of my emails, you have a glimpse of what I'm about to say. The Lord told me, and no one said, because I confessed some things with David, and the Lord had made it abundantly clear to me that I had been living in my life with willful, unconfessed sin. Now, I don't want that to shake anybody, but I'm just going to tell you. The Lord says judgment begins in his household, and he's absolutely right. The Lord's blessed me in so many incredible ways, but I want you to know I fell into mortal sin about a year and a half ago. Nothing that I committed in my body, but I committed it with my thought, and I committed it on the internet. And I'm telling you, it's a trap. It's a major trap. Well, I lived with that thing, and I enjoyed it, but I never confessed it. You see, there's a part of us that wants to continue to enjoy that sin. Or at least it was for me. Anyway, I did confess that. And the Lord made it abundantly clear that that was the reason that I was in the condition. I had planted a harvest and I was reaping it. It's exactly what it was. Well, the Lord used this vessel, but he wasn't going to use it forever as an unclean vessel, not with unconfessed sin. So anyway, I got my sins confessed up to date, and that's important. If you got that email I sent out, Bertha Smith, she's dead now. She was a single woman. She was a Baptist missionary. She knew the Lord. And she said, and that was one of the first things she ever said. She didn't go into any pleasantries. "Hello, how are you?" She said, "Are your sins confessed up to date?" Now, she'd scare most people half to death. But she was right. People need to get jolted to get your attention to see, are you? Because, you see, if you don't confess your sin, he is not going to forgive your sin and cleanse you from all unrighteousness. Mm-hmm. Or at least that's the way I read 1 John 1:9.
And confess your sins that you may be healed.
That I may be healed. Exactly. Exactly. Well, I want to tell you this. Through the entire experience, I never once lost Philippians 4, 7. I never lost the peace that passes understanding. I mean, there is no explanation for the peace that God gave me through every bit of that. Well, Friday they scheduled a heart catheterization. They wanted to go in there and look and see what was going on. Well, here's where the real soccer came. I was supposed to go in at 1 o'clock, and because they had... Sometimes when they go in for a heart catheterization, if they see they can do angioplasty and they're in there, they'll go ahead and do it on some people. Well, anyway, my 1 o'clock turned into about a 3:30, which was okay, and what else did I have to do? So anyway, they finally rolled me down there, got me all prepped for this thing, and it was probably a 25-minute procedure. The room was freezing cold. They keep it about 50 degrees because they want their metabolism way down. Well, anyway, Dr. Doty, very nice man, very thorough and excellent bedside manner. A very nice man. He took his time. He made sure you had, if you had unanswered questions, it wasn't because he wasn't there to answer. Okay, for what he did it well. Well, anyway, he's the one that actually conducted the procedure. Well, they actually go in this big artery in your groin, and they put a needle in this leg, this arm, and they run this thing up, and they put this dial in you. And then they have this monster machine, and they take all these pictures of your heart. Well, they knew immediately when they finished. I mean, it wasn't because they had people there to read it and give the analysis. And they pulled me back over got me back on the gurney, and pulled me back over into a little recovery area, and I guess I stayed there 30, 40 minutes. And then they rolled me out to where my family was waiting outside, and Dr. Doty came along to give the report. Well, they had photographs. They gave me the photographs. They kept a set for the final. And here's what they said. They said, "Mr. Taylor, your heart is 70 to 90% dead. Two of the major three arteries are fully blocked. The other one is partially blocked. And what arteries are there are disintegrating." That's not a good report. I mean, that is not a good report. I'm laying up there on this thing and I'm listening to that. But you know, that peace that passes understanding, it did not leave me even at that report. Didn't leave me even with that report. My family, I could just see they got probably whiter than I was when they heard that report. Well, they ultimately rolled me back to the room, and I could see on my family's face was, you know, they knew that I wasn't long before I was in Bayview or somewhere. Well, Saturday morning, I went through another night of sitting up to sleep. Anyway, Saturday morning, about 8 o'clock, one of the surgeons from Sacred Heart Cardiac came in to talk to him. His name is Dr. Nielsen, ratings people. Very curt, he was very matter of fact. He had no bedside manner, in other words. So he came in and he said, "Mr. Taylor, we reviewed your case and we cannot do angioplasty. We don't even recommend heart surgery." He says, "We cannot justify that the benefits would be the risk. So there's just not anything we can do except maybe give you some medicine." And I said, "Thank you." And about another hour went by, and Dr. Rogers came in. Totally different personnel. Came and sat on the bed and smiled. He was very gracious. He stayed, and he really talked to me very clearly about what they reviewed in my case. And he said materially the same thing. And he said, "Would you like to go home?" And I said, "Dr. Rogers, that'd be real nice. I'd like to go home." He said, "Okay, we'll arrange for you to go home, and I'm going to give you some medication." And I thanked him. Well, when they discharge him, the hospital doesn't happen real fast. I didn't ultimately get discharged until after 4 o'clock that afternoon. This was 9 o'clock Saturday morning. By the time they did all they had to do, and by the time Dr. Zimba came by and explained the medications that the heart unit had prescribed me, it was, it just took time. And then I guess about 10 after 4, or thereabouts, is when they say they discharged me. Then I had to wait another 30 or 40 minutes for the nurse to come and unhook me from monitors and pull the shunt out and, you know, get all this stuff. They literally had sent me home to die. I mean, that's what I see in it. There wasn't nothing they could do, and they knew it.
Yeah.
There wasn't a thing they could do, and they knew it. And I knew all the time in my heart, I said, I want to go to David's, and I want to be prayed for tonight. I don't wait till next Wednesday. I don't want to wait till Monday morning. I want to go tonight. So, I don't know if I had called you from the hospital or if I called you after I got home, but I called David, and he very again kindly offered to come and pick me up because I really think I'm too weak to drive. I said, but I'd really like to come and be prayed for tonight. So he said, what time to come? And he got to my house about 6 o'clock. We got on out here. I said, I really need a straight chair. Now, I can sit back now. You know, I mean, it doesn't bother me at all, but I wanted something to sit me up. I came in here, and I'm going to backtrack a little bit, but I came in here and I was about to freeze. Everybody else was quite comfortable. I was about to freeze. You see, when your heart's only doing 30% at the most and 10% at the least, your circulation has suffered. Well, this is one thing I had noticed, I guess, Thursday and Friday, and especially Friday, because I kept asking my boys and my wife, said, would you please go down there? Because my feet were under the cover. I said, my toes were freezing. They were absolutely freezing. I said, would you please go down there and just wrap your hand around my toes? I mean, I really want to get some warmth in my feet. Well, they did, but I didn't get any warmth. I mean, there was just no circulation. There was no blood down there. Of course, they say the extremities are the first to suffer. Well, so I knew this, and my nose was cold all the time. I mean, the tip of my nose was just freezing. My hands never got cold. I guess because they're right in line with the heart. I guess the way it pumps or something. That my hands were warm. But boy, my legs, my feet, I was cold. Anyway, my family really were troopers. They really were. They went down there and just kept their hands on my feet, trying to warm my feet up, but they wouldn't warm up. Well, David came and picked me up, and I sat right about here. I said, David, I'm so cold. He went and got me a blanket, and I put it on. I didn't know I had it on. I was so cold.
No fans turning.
Nothing. Mary was. She said she was watching to keep, you know, to try to help.
Well, I had asked her if she could turn the fan on, and she says, "Well, Ray's cold, you know." So
I'm cold. I was just cold as I could be. And see, I never knew that. You know, I've always heard of people who have these problems, you know, and they end up with, you know, they have to end up ultimately amputating toes and ultimately parts of feet and all that stuff because the blood can't get there to, you know, to nourish the tissue. Well, anyway, David did it. They all accused me of going to sleep. Well, they were wrong. I heard a positively wonderful message from Numbers 13 and 14. The primary emphasis being that 10 came back with a bad report, but 2 came back a good report. And it was a wonderful message. I did. I nodded, and I know, because I was weak as a kitten. I was really weak. So I guess a little after 9, maybe 10 after 9, 5 after 9, something like that, David said, now, we need to pray for Ray. Everybody rallied. And David got some oil and came and anointed me with oil. I think everybody in the room got up and came over here and laid a hand on me, or at least got a hand on somebody who had a hand on me. And from all I could tell, the prayer lasted maybe 4 minutes. Bill Rowe was here, and he was very helpful to David. But David even said, Bill, help me. Because you know, as far as talking heart jargon, you know, help me. Because that was one of the things we said before we prayed. I wanted specific items covered. You know, Philippians 4:6, be careful for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, make your specific requests known to God. Because I didn't want no wholesale praying, I wanted retail praying. I mean, I really did. I wanted to pray for arteries and for
chambers.
You know, I wanted to pray for this whole thing. And they did. And well, anyway, after the prayer, y'all were here. Weren't you here? You were here. I knew you were here. Anyway, everybody went back to their seats, and I was still kind of, you know, I was kind of looking through a fog a little bit. You know, every part of my body had suffered because of the lack of blood. And I was just beginning to see some of that. But anyway, everybody went back to their seats. Well, I don't know who said it. It may have been Kurt, or it could have been Dot. If somebody said, look at his face. Who said that?
Was it you?
Yes, and look at his face. The color's coming. You were here.
Yeah, you did too.
And several people said that. Said, look at his face. Because Kurt says, he says, I looked at Ray and I just couldn't believe it. I don't think I ever saw anybody with that white of skin. And
scary.
Well, that's what he said. He said it, and of course, now Kurt said that whenever he came over and laid his hand on me, that the Lord gave him an open vision of a heart. I mean, a healthy heart, just
all
really pumping.
Heart was just
every bit of it, just working, just working.
Just like you see in the movie.
That's right. That's right. There was no part of it dead. It was all working. Well, when they had that, I mean, I really said, oh, Jesus, thank you. Well, then, I guess maybe, that was maybe a minute after the prayer. Then another, it wasn't 5 minutes. It was not 5 minutes until the Lord gave me signs following. In his mercy, he gave me two signs. I felt heat moving back into my toes. Not from any outside influence, but from the inside. And I felt heat back at the tip of my nose. I mean, I knew that we had what we had asked for. And he'd given me a new heart. But David made it abundantly clear. He says, you know, Raymond, you didn't need a slow recovery. You needed a quick miracle. When you're 70 to 90% dead and what you've got's disintegrating, you know, the Lord literally snapped me back from the grave. He literally, just like he, you know, it's the Psalms are replete with that about David. He says, you know, my feet were nigh unto slipping in.
Mm-hmm.
And you pulled me back. And you pulled me back. Well, you know, when he pulled him back, you know, it's when Nathan confronted him and he confessed his sin.
Yeah.
And he'd lived with it for over a year.
Mm-hmm.
King David mm-hmm. had lived with that sin for over a year. I knew I had what we had prayed for and what we had asked. And I'm telling you, this was one happy man. I really was happy. Amen. And then we all sat around and did for a while. And came time to go home, and David was going to take me. And Bill Rowe, you know, he's an interesting man. He says, I'd really like to drive you home. And you know where he thought he was going to have to take me? The Guthrie's, almost in the bar. That's where he thought he was going to have to go. And I looked at his face, and I looked at him. He says, "I really want to drive you home." And so when David came, I says, "Would you mind terribly? I mean, you came and got me." Bill says he really wants to drive me home. And I tried to tell him. He says, "Way out of your way." He says, "I don't care. I want to drive you." I said, I'd be real pleased to come for you to drive me home. So he got me into his truck that he's keeping for his friend from Oregon, and he drove me home. And he walked me to the door, helped me up just to be sure everything was going fine. And, he said some real sweet things to me. He gave me a big hug. He said, you know, you have really been a major encouragement and inspiration in my life. And I said, well, I give all the thanks and glory to the Lord, and I just encourage you to do the same. And so, I thanked him, but I told him that I would be remiss if I didn't say that. And so he turned and left. Well, anyway, I've been in recovery for the last week and a half, and last week there were times when I didn't feel too good, but yesterday was the first day, and just based on feelings, that I really felt like I was myself and alive again. I mean, really good. Really good. And I felt really good today. And folks, I'm just going to testify. there is absolutely no explanation for my even being here for him. No explanation. And I've learned some very valuable lessons. Very valuable lessons. And I want to tell you, Ananias and Sapphira is for real. You know, there are situations that we need to be very keenly aware of. And one of them in particular is to not ever, ever hide anything. Doesn't matter if you didn't, because you didn't know. Nobody knew. He knew. And he knew that I wouldn't, that he wasn't going to let me get away with it. And the crop that I planted was going to come up, and it did. And I paid a pretty heavy price for it. But you know something? I asked the Lord when this was going, I said, Lord, is this the disease with which I am to die? And he said, no. This is not the disease with which you are to die. And I said, thank you. But I tell you, there are times through it that I felt like I was going to die. Because it was rough. It was really rough. I have asked him and I have thanked him for never, ever letting me fall into that type of a situation ever again. It's very important to do that.
I had a dream that I shared with David several weeks ago about, it was just a short dream. I was having my house remodeled, and I don't remember how big the house was or whatever, but it was, there was workers there, and they were in the floor, there would be a hole in the floor, and instead of them cutting out that board and replacing it with another that was solid, they just put the tile over the top of that hole. And it was the same in the walls. I remember, instead of, you know, where there would be a hole in the wall, instead of again embracing or bracing that with what are you supposed to do? I'm not a construction worker, but you guys know what I'm talking about. They would just cover that with sheetrock, you know. So the foundation was being remodeled and covered over faults. And I asked David, I said, that was really a crazy dream. You know, I don't really understand it. And his interpretation was, you know, in my life or in the life of the church or whatever, you know,